Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Come on, babe, why don't we paint the town? And all that jazz, I'm gonna rouge my knees and roll my stockings down. And all that jazz, start the car, I know a whoopee spot.
Today, New York State might be dealing with a political scandal straight out of a Candor and Ebb song, but Chicago won't give up the bragging rights to colorful politics, not if NPR Scott Simon has anything to say about it. The host of Weekend Edition Saturday has a new novel out today that is set in the multicultural rough-and-tumble world of local ward politics in Chicago. The book is called Windy City, and happy to say Scott's in our studio right now. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Very good to be here.
Great title. Do you think politicians in Chicago deserve it?
Well, Windy City, do I get to explain what Windy City
exactly
means? It's got nothing to do with the wind off the lake. It dates back to the Columbian Exposition. In fact, it was newspapers here in New York that referred to Chicago as the Windy City because politicians in New York were so boastful and loquacious. And so, yeah, that's how I took the title that way, because the politicians in here in my book are windy and give speeches, which I hope are funny and informed and pointed and moving and all that sort of stuff. Yeah, you know, aldermen, city councilmen, are the comic relief of politics. They're the clowns getting out of the Volkswagen. And I still laugh at them, and there's a lot of opportunity for humor there. But
Did you ever hear the old line, which I think came from the former New York City Parks Commissioner, Henry Stern, who asked the difference between a city council member and a rubber stamp?
No, I didn't hear this one.
Rubber stamp leaves an impression.
Damn, I wish it was in the paperback version. I can assure you some character is going to make that same observation. You know, but they do some very useful and valuable things, city councilmen. And what intrigued me about setting a novel among city council members is, if you write a novel these days where senators and congressmen and governors, we're talking about a governor this morning, are the principal characters, they're surrounded by aides. People in the city council still have to talk to each other. The wheeling and dealing pretty much is interpersonal, and that's what I wanted to capture.
To each other, and also to the constituents. You know, we did, in all seriousness, a series on the show 2 or 3 years ago called New York 51, where we interviewed all 51 members of the New York City Council over the course of a year.
Yeah.
And they really are among the closest to the ground.
Oh, they are relentlessly exposed. There's a snowstorm, their cell phone starts ringing because people who live in the ward,
that's right,
in their district expect them to do something.
So you're going to do a reading from your book for us. Why don't you do that right now?
Yeah, please. It's very open, and my principal character is Sundaran Sunny Rupini, who was the alderman of the 48th Ward in Chicago. Born in India, runs a restaurant, alderman. He's a ward healer. He's never been a reformer like Governor Spitzer. He's not a dishonest man, but he's a ward healer. So he's talking about the nature of voting. I'm going to do a Chicago accent, okay? Some people will vote for you because they like the sound of your name. Some people won't vote for you because you got a name that reminds them of some malodorous vegetable. You get some votes from people who think you're Italian. You lose some votes from people who think you're Sicilian. Your name reminds some people of the kid who sat behind him in the third grade. Pray that that kid never smeared snot on their arm. People you never met feel intensely about you. You think I'm kidding? You think you're above all that? You want to tell me when you look down at 9 names on the ballot for Water Reclamation District Trustee, you know who they are? You know where they went to school, what they do, how they plan to get the fish turds out of your drinking water? Nah. You say to yourself, I like her name, it rhymes, or he's Cuban, they're smart. And someday a bomb knocks out a grate, a wind whips up the water, suddenly they're the most wanted people in town. Bills, votes, raising money, every grand or noble thing you've ever done can be undone by the damnedest thing. You forget Lech Wałęsa's birthday. You tell a joke about a rabbi. You say, geez, blacks really are better than basketball. And next thing you got pickets in your front windows from the NAACP to the North American Man-Boy Love Association. I'll end this way. But somehow it keeps the tanks off the street. It's amazing and ridiculous. Hardly any of us wind up being Lincoln, Churchill, or LaGuardia. Most of us aren't even Hoover or Carter. But so far, no one here has been Paul Potter Stalin. Of course the game isn't fair. It favors to rich, to beautiful, and to shameless. But everybody gets a chance to try.
Very philosophical.
I think so, yeah.
Why'd you choose that passage? Do you want to talk about it?
Well, because we're in the middle of an election year, and an exciting election year. And I think it's worth noting that for all its imperfections and all its corruptions, we still have a system here that can inch the country, the city, affairs along. And that's precious in the world. It's not unique. We sometimes think we're the only country that can do that, and you know that's hardly the case. There are 50 in the world, including India, by the way.
But, anybody yeah. want to talk to Scott Simon this morning? Any Chicagoans listening right now or anyone else? 212-433-WNYC.
I mean, the book's set in Chicago, but it's, you know, it's about all of us.
212-433-9692 for anything you want to talk to Scott Simon about.
You know why I said it in Chicago?
Why?
You didn't ask, but do you mind if I answer my own question?
I was going to ask. You just beat me to it.
I wanted to write a political comedy. And firstly, I was astonished to kind of review the territory and see that a good one really hadn't been set in Chicago. If you'd set it here in New York, people around the country can dismiss as New York as, oh, that's just New York. You set it in Los Angeles, the same kind of thing. Set it in San Francisco, lots of it. But you set it in Chicago, it infers something about the country. People think, well, gosh, that really says something.
And you're from Chicago.
I happen to be, conveniently, yes.
Right? So
yes,
you're familiar with it, and familiarity often helps lead to good writing.
Yeah. Well, I certainly hope so. I certainly hope that's the case.
By the way, do you turn the accent on and off at will? I have a British friend who, when he's talking to his British mates, sounds like a completely different person from when he's talking to me.
The best example I ever saw of that was former Governor Thompson of Illinois, who, when he was campaigning on the west side of Chicago, he would say, "Hey, the reason why Daley wants to whip me ain't because I'm a Republican. It's because I went after his boys and put him into slammer." He'd get down to southern Illinois, which is farther south than Cairo, Illinois, farther south than Louisville. He'd go, "The only reason Mayor Daley wants to whip me is because I put his gang in prison." He's just astonishing. And I called him on it once, and he said he professed to be totally unaware of the fact that that's what he was doing.
It's Cairo, is it?
It's Cairo in Illinois.
C-A-I-R-O, Cairo.
Cairo, yes.
Yes, near Houston Street in Manhattan.
Yes.
212-433-WNYC. And Jim in Mount Kisco, you're on with Scott Simon. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Scott. First of all, I want to say I think your tone is right on. I grew up in Cincinnati, and I've lived in St. Louis and Chicago. Just anecdotally, when I was in Cincinnati, when I was in high school, I worked as a volunteer, excuse me, on Jerry Springer's campaign, and this was at the time when he got in the news nationally for bouncing a check to a hooker in Kentucky.
Yeah.
He probably would have become governor of Ohio and not become Jerry Springer had he not done that. So maybe this is the future for Elliot Spitzer.
Elliot Spitzer on Talk TV.
You know, a line occurred to me in Windy City, as almost everything now that happens in the world reminds me of Windy. I've become very much like a politician. Something happens. Hey, how does this affect me? I have a line at one point, Sonny Rupini. There's a liberal reformer who gets indicted in a federal sting operation. And my hero, Sonny Rupini, says to the mayor of Chicago, "Gosh, that's a shame. I always thought Stan was one of the incorruptible ones." And the mayor of Chicago says to him, "Oh, don't be so hard on him, son." Saying somebody's incorruptible is like saying they never get hungry or thirsty. It's like saying that gravity doesn't apply.
Let me ask you about the character, Sonny Rupini.
Yeah.
He's South Asian.
He's South Asian, yeah. He's born in Bombay. He's a Tamil Indian extraction.
You know, I don't think, and my producer will correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think there is yet a South Asian member of the New York City Council.
There is not. There was not, as of when I checked a few weeks ago, unless there's been a special election or appointment, and there hasn't. There's not in Chicago.
There's not.
But the population is increasing, and I think, I wrote most of this book before Bobby Jindal became governor of Louisiana, and there's some Indian immigration in Louisiana, but not so much that they all came together and elected a governor. I think Indians are bringing some of the strength into politics, and they already have in British and Canadian politics, that the Irish brought into big city politics. They are fluent in English, often quite eloquently so, and they have experience in a knock-'em-dead political system, parliamentary democracy at home. And I think all of that equips them to be very competitive here if that's what they choose to be.
NPR Scott Simon is here talking about his new novel, Windy City, and Evelyn in Washington Heights. You're on WNYC. Hi, Evelyn. Yeah, I can say your name. Evelyn, hi.
This is a very quick story about a councilman. Many years ago, I was in Oaxaca when there was a major earthquake in Mexico City. My parents knew we were in Oaxaca, and the New York Times reported that Oaxaca was cut off. So they were frantic, and they called the Red Cross, and the Red Cross couldn't help them. Somebody said, call your city councilman. The city councilman had somebody call us from Washington, D.C. at the hotel, find out that we were fine, and the very next day my father had information. And the funny part of the story was my father would never vote for the city councilman because he was so corrupt, and ever after he voted for him.
Well, you can't ask more of a public official than that, can you? No, I find...
That's why they call them public servants.
Yes.
At least from time to time.
Well, you know, and the, what is it Nelson Algren said? In Chicago, the definition of an honest judge is a judge who, when you bribe him, he stays bribed, even if he gets an offer of a bigger one. Reform is has saturated even into Chicago. But, I think for a lot of people who live in cities, that's what they crave, somebody to make a connection to the big impersonal bureaucracy. And that's often a city council person. And I don't think they have to apologize for that. They get very good things done.
Thanks, Evelyn. Your book features a lot of food. Sonny is a restaurant owner, and pizza is a reward for the mayor for having to eat a lot of ethnic food or other ethnic food.
A couple of large pizzas are delivered to him every night, because he eats everything. And he's got a speech where he says, you know, I can't turn down anything. What can I say to the good people of Pilsen? I can't turn down their tres leches cake when they've already observed that I've had the Polski dessert there in Polish town. So food is very important, as I think it is in politics, as far as that goes.
So that's about overeating, that line you used. Did he not take to some of the ethnic foods that he needed to eat to show his ethnic solidarities?
Well, there can be a very serious reaction sometimes if you're imbibing too much. And as he said, as the mayor of Chicago, my mayor of Chicago says, he's a famously gargantuan man of enormous appetites, and he can't turn down any preferred food without offending. He says, you know, my God, ma'am, do you want another land war in Asia? What if I turn down the egg rolls on Canal Street?
You are a bit more lighthearted in depicting the ethnic rivalries than, say, Tom Wolfe in Bonfire of the Vanities. You've seen the horror of ethnic tensions writ large in your career in places like the Balkans, but it's a different animal in Chicago. You can laugh about it?
Well, I think sometimes you can laugh about it, and I don't want to be naive about the ethnic rivalries that exist. And one of the things I think I do I rarely actually refer to somebody by their race, which almost you don't hear that in politics now. I mean, people in Windy City will refer to, well, you can't have two people on the ticket who are Southsiders. That means you can't have two African-Americans at the top of the ticket. But nobody uses that kind of language anymore. This is something, by the way, I'm very sensitive to with, I must say, adopted daughters who are Chinese. In this country, I think we underestimate how much at least rhetorical progress that we have made that way. And I think, look, at one point, Sonny Rapini is somebody's trying to convince him he can be hold statewide office one day. And he says, oh, come on, are you kidding? Rapini, they think that's a malodorous vegetable in southern Illinois. And then somebody says to him, Sonny, this is Illinois. And not to be too prideful of this, but you know, Barack Obama is the second African-American senator elected from Illinois in recent years. I think the degree of
and
progress.
And the other one ran for president, too.
Yes, not as successfully, apparently, so far. But in any event, I think the degree of progress that's been made in the political system in representing people from different communities is enormous over this past generation, even particularly in Chicago and Illinois.
By the way, I have a friend with two adopted Asian daughters, and he says the thing that bothers him the most is that people will come up to him in front of the little girls and ask about their ethnic difference from him. Do you get that?
Oh, all the time. Absolutely. You know, we handle it. You'd be amazed at what people say. You know, like, well, my wife actually has a wonderful response. People will sometimes say to her something like, when she's alone, oh, do they look like their father? And my wife will say, well, I don't know. I suppose so. Most children do.
We'll continue in a minute with Scott Simon, host of NPR Weekend Edition Saturday, his new novel, Windy City. We'll talk more about Barack Obama when we come back and take more of your phone calls for Scott Simon at 212-433-9692, 212-433-WNYC. We'll be right back. Brian Lehrer on WNYC with NPR's Scott Simon, his new novel, Windy City. Before we talk about Obama a little bit, Chicago Mayor Harold Washington, who died from a heart attack in his office in real life, the mayor in your book, the mayor figure, remains one of the most colorful characters. And that mayor, the real Harold Washington, appears in a flashback. How much does your mayor get from Mayor Washington?
Well, a lot, in the sense when I was writing my mayor's comic speeches, I very definitely had Harold Washington's voice in vices too, I suppose, his voice in my mind. But I tell you, he also gets a lot from Ed Koch here in New York, who I had the pleasure of profiling any number of occasions. And I do mean the pleasure. He's a very fun guy to profile. And for that matter, Ken Livingstone in London. He's a lot like Ed Koch in the sense, as he says to somebody at one point, "You can't flatter me. I have too high an opinion of myself." And you can imagine Ed Koch going, "You can't flatter me. I have too high an opinion of myself." So the mayor absorbs a lot from mayors I've seen. But, of course, every character becomes their own in the end.
Can you do a Brazilian, an Ecuadorian?
I'm not very good at that, no.
By the way, I did make an error there in the way I stated that. It's not Mayor Washington who comes back in a flashback. It's the mayor. It's your character of the mayor.
Yes, the character of the mayor appears in constant flashbacks. He dies on the first page of the novel, but he nonetheless, I hope, is a pretty powerful presence in the book.
All right, you wrote an op-ed recently about the role chance played in setting Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama on the road to running for the presidency. And that's in your book, and it's looking like in Joe Bruno's and David Patterson's lives now in Albany. Have you seen that play out a lot, chance, in stories you've covered?
Yes, I have. And let me tell the Obama-Clinton story, because I was, I guess it was 10 years ago, spending election night in the confines of the Chicago Democratic Organization. And they told me the story. Carol Moseley Braun was then the incumbent senator. There were corruption charges swirling around her that even jaded Chicagoans were impressed by. They were desperately looking for a way to get her off the ticket, but you don't easily get the first African-American woman elected to the Senate off the ticket. Her picture is hanging up in grammar schools really all over the country. So they tried to interest some African-American politicians who wanted no part of it. They had heard that Hillary Clinton, of course born in Chicago, had been interested. They called her up, offered her the chance to run. She said no. Now, as I say in the article, you're left to speculate why. She might have just been tired of politics and scandal at that point. Her husband obviously had put the family through a lot. I think also she may not have wanted to begin her political career by running against the only African-American woman in the Senate. She said no. A guy named Peter Fitzgerald, the Republican, winds up getting elected. A few years later, Barack Obama decides to run against Bobby Rush, who's the congressman of the 2nd Congressional District in Chicago. Bobby Rush would not be confused with Elliot Spitzer or, for that matter, Noel Coward. The Daily Organization was eager to see Senator Obama make the run. It was a vicious and ugly campaign where Congressman Rush actually assailed now Senator Obama as the white candidate. You know, he said this guy's African. He's not African-American. He doesn't know what it's like to grow up on the south side of Chicago like we do. It was an ugly campaign. Obama lost. Turned out to be the best thing for him, because if he had been elected, he'd now be a junior member of the Illinois congressional delegation, would probably have to defer to Jesse Jackson Jr., certainly wouldn't be running for the Senate. I'm intrigued by the fact that had Hillary Clinton made the run then, the seat wouldn't have been open for Obama. And there's another division. It's because since Peter Fitzgerald was elected, the guy he appointed U.S. attorney in Chicago, of course, is Patrick Fitzgerald from the Southern District here in New York, who's now putting Charles Rezko on trial. And I think if there's any chance of derailing the momentum in Senator Obama's campaign, it might rest in that Chicago courtroom. And it all ties together in the race that Hillary Clinton declined to make, the one that Barack Obama lost.
Chance.
Yeah.
You know, you talk about Rush running against, that's Bobby Rush running against Obama as being too white. Have you seen the very funny Dick Gregory video being widely viewed on YouTube?
No.
Dick Gregory.
I'm a big fan of Dick Gregory.
He's sort of lecturing other black people, and he's saying, white people didn't make Obama white and Clinton black. You did. Oh. It was us who called Bill Clinton the first black president. It was us who called Barack Obama too white. And now you regret it. But don't blame white people for that. Of course, the way he does it is very funny.
Yeah. Wait, as anything is very funny. I'm big Dick Gregory. I haven't seen him in recent years, I must say. I have to go to YouTube to see him.
Well, that's...
I know he's still out there, but he's become kind of like an elder statesman.
Yeah, I think he's a little reclusive. Did he move to the islands or something like that?
I don't know. Last I talked to him, he was in Plymouth, Massachusetts.
John in Glen Cove. You're on WNYC with Scott Simon. Hi, John.
Hi, Scott.
Hi there.
Terrific show, as usual. Always exactly on time. I just wonder, Scott, if you've thought about comparing Obama, I'm surprised nobody has, to that other Illinois president, Lincoln. There are so many parallels. They're both inexperienced, relatively speaking, and they had to straddle a very controversial issue.
Yeah, I think a lot of people have talked about it, and of course we'll make comparisons with their eloquence. It should be said, I think President Lincoln became identified with the cause of anti-slavery in a way. He was the leader of a movement and a new political party in this country.
I mean, let's be honest. You can't compare anybody with Lincoln, really.
Yes,
right?
Exactly.
Nobody's really facing that challenge.
Yes.
And, I think it took a unique amount of courage in the context of American history to be Abraham Lincoln that very few presidents have been asked to summon, and certainly to this point in his life, Barack Obama hasn't.
Yeah. You know, and by the way, just to be a nettlesome journalist, although I'm here as a novelist, I will sometimes remind people that for Senator Obama to oppose the war in Iraq wasn't when you represent the Hyde Park District of Chicago, it's a little bit like representing Morningside Heights. I don't think they have, in fact, been in favor of a war, including the Civil War, since Lincoln's time. So I think he was only reflecting the views of his constituency at that point.
But there's a balancing act there that I would guess, and you tell me because you were more aware of what was going on in Illinois at that time, I would guess that he had to balance in a purely political sense the interests of his local constituents or the opinions of his local constituents against the desire that he had to potentially run for the Senate at that time, which would have been a whole different thing. And I don't know if he was considering the presidency at that time, but was it necessarily a vote of political convenience for somebody who, yes, was representing that particular local neighborhood, but also looking at a statewide race?
I don't want to deride it for a moment as just a vote of political convenience, because I think had it been in the other direction, he would have everything I know about him suggests he would have exercised an active conscience. It didn't come to that. Illinois has been a pretty heavily anti-war state from the beginning. I think perhaps even more so than New York. So I think he didn't have to confront his mortality as a political candidate that way. You know, as to the question about him running for president, I think I said in that op-ed piece, which was for the LA Times, I think that Senator Clinton might be less calculating than some of her detractors assert, and Senator Obama a little bit more. I mean, in other words, Hillary Clinton left Washington, D.C., moved to a small town in Arkansas to marry Bill Clinton, and effectively sort of removed herself from what was a burgeoning political career. I don't think anyone like Barack Obama, who's been the editor of the Harvard Law Review, doesn't consider plotting a course for political success. And I don't think there's any need to apologize for that. But all of which is a way of suggesting I think this is something that has been on his mind for a number of years. And I think you see that in the way he's run this campaign.
Everett in Brooklyn. You're on WNYC with Scott Simon. Hi, Everett.
Hi. Good morning. I was 7 years old and lived in Chicago for 1 year in 1941. And in November, my father took me to Michigan Avenue, where I saw on a Sunday 35,000 German-American men wearing swastikas march up Michigan Avenue. And I'll never forget it.
I believe they're gone at this particular point. That must have been startling to see in 1941.
My super was one of them.
Oh, really? And
yeah.
In your building? Well,
super,
you know,
my building was one of them.
Colonel McCormick, Robert R. McCormick, who then ran the Chicago Tribune, was the great isolationist at that particular point. He and Colonel Lindbergh and Reverend Coughlin and a lot of other people were absolutely bound up with the America First movement at that particular point.
Do you see the Chicago in Barack Obama?
Yes, I think in the way he's run this campaign, in the way David Axelrod, who was Mayor Daley's campaign manager for many years, has run this campaign, and I don't, you know, I don't get too abstract about it. I think you can see the Chicago part of the campaign in that they, better than the Clinton campaign so far, understood the importance of the caucuses. I think they understood there were a lot of delegates to be won there, and they were able to create certainly the sensation of momentum as they won, I believe it was 12 in a row. So, yes, I do see that. They know how to count. They know how to organize.
Before you go, this is your second novel, right?
Second?
Does writing fiction scratch an itch that reporting can't?
Yes, absolutely. I love writing novels. I find it exercises other talents. It, I hope, also freshens my journalism. But, it may, you know, I have a very rich repertorial career, and it lets me make use of things that I see, things that I think I know, and present them in another form that I hope gives some delight to people.
So it's not just indulging your imagination. You just described it in a very reporter's kind of way. Write about things you see, things you know, but do it in a different way.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't written the fantasy yet, and I'm not sure that's ahead. I have lots of ideas for novels, and that's not ahead. But I hope I can take. I've had such a rich repertorial career, and yet I think novels can reach people in a way that journalism doesn't always. It can stay with people. It can tickle them in a certain way. And that's what I try and do with novels. In something like Windy City, I hope the characters are going to stay with them all out of time and circumstance.
NPR Scott Simon, his new book, Windy City, a novel of politics. And I understand you'll be back in town in April for a reading.
Yes, at Barnes & Noble, Upper West Side, where actually I wrote a lot of the book in the cafe, it must be said, and I think April 8th at the New York Historical Society.
Well, thanks for stopping in today, Scott.
Thank you very much, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, coming up in a minute, back to the Spitzer story. We'll check in with WNYC's Bob Henley, who's in Albany today. Just when are we going to hear from the governor again? And then we will ask the question, should prostitution be illegal at all, with a former prostitute and Emily Bazelon from Slate. Stay with us.